Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. Again, my name is Jeffrey Davis. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the show. And I want to thank our co-hosts and our hosts who hosting us today, Tarlo Breed Harton Rogers and my co-host, Mark Furman.
Hey, Jeffrey, great to be here and looking forward to hearing from our next guest.
Yes, thank you. Let's see how I do. Ronald Barrier, partner, Burns and Levinson.
Hi, how are you, Jeff?
Welcome.
Mark.
Tell us about your practice, please.
Sure. I'm primarily a divorce lawyer, but I like to say that I'm a family law lawyer. And what I mean by family law is I practice all aspects of probate and family law for individuals. So anything that's in the probate and family court, I can do, from litigation to mediation to advisory work. I like to work with families, multi-generations. I like to be a part of their lives and be someone that they can collaborate with on all the major decisions that impact their lives, not just divorce.
Right. So is the law around divorce, though, changing a lot?
It is. It's changed significantly in the past few years. First in 2011 with the enactment of the Alimony Reform Act, which is, you know, kind of a hot button issue because it kind of codified what had been previously thought to be kind of a rule of thumb, which is that a third of a payor's income should go to the payor, a third of his income should go to the recipient spouse, and a third should go to the government. And that ultimately was codified by the Alimony Reform Act. But then in 2017, our president threw a bit of a wrinkle in that by eradicating the tax deductibility of alimony. So on a federal level, alimony is no longer tax deductible, which kind of change the scope of what is an appropriate level of support for a recipient spouse, whereas it used to be 30 to 35%. Now the trend is going between 23 and 28% just because of the loss of tax deductibility.
Has that lowered the alimony payments, or has it just made it harder for one party to fund what they're doing?
The answer is
yes.
Kind of. Yeah. it's what it's done essentially is it's reduced the percentage that goes to the recipient. But when you factor in the fact that Massachusetts still allows tax deductibility of alimony, but the federal level does not, it's basically reduced the percentage. But from a net standpoint, it ends up being about the same.
Wow. How did you get into this whole field? Was this the way you started when you got out of law school? Was this the goal?
No, actually, it's interesting that you ask. I actually was preparing to become a tax attorney, and as well as an entertainment lawyer. We have an entertainment practice at Barnes.
Well, there's consistency.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's funny you should say that, because that's exactly what happened. Early in my career, I ended up working for a professional athlete, and this is going to surprise you both, but professional athletes don't necessarily make the best decisions in their personal lives. So as a result, I ended up spending quite a bit of time at the probate and family court. And what I realized very quickly is that I actually had a knack for it, that, you know, I had an ability to kind of handle the complexity that family law has, as well as, you know, I was comfortable being on my feet, standing in front of lawyers, standing in front of judges, making arguments. So I kind of fell into it.
Do you still have higher profile clients as a result of that start?
I do. You know, I usually have one higher profile athlete every probably 18 months or so. It's certainly not a niche, but yes.
But it would be fun.
Yes and no. You know, one of the things that I've realized is that, first of all, people are the same. You know, no matter how many zeros are in their bank account, they have the similar type of problems. But one problem that is unique to athletes and entertainers is everywhere you go, they are recognized. I was once representing a basketball player, and he was nearly 7 feet tall. And you could not hide this guy. No matter where we went, there he was. And people are going, oh, look who it is. Oh, look who it is. Oh, look who it is. And he developed this amazing ability to be polite but keep moving. And his technique was to say, appreciate you. I appreciate you. And he would just point at someone and say, I appreciate you, and then keep moving. Never stop moving. And they developed this sense that, hey, I interacted with this guy, but they didn't really interact with him. But it was a kind of a self-protection mechanism. So that's kind of a unique problem. I couldn't just stand and talk to him anywhere.
So just getting back to alimony for a moment.
Sure.
What's the state of the law in terms of how long alimony continues. Is it permanent or is it temporary?
And the answer, as the answer is in all things in the law, is it depends. A lot of it is primarily predicated on the length of the marriage. If a marriage is of 20 years or greater, the presumption is actually that alimony will go for an indefinite period of time, so forever. There are terminating events such as full retirement from employment or reaching full retirement age, which, depending on when you were born, could be anywhere between 65 and 67. But primarily, there is a graduated scale in the Alimony Reform Act that contemplates when alimony duration will end based upon the length of the marriage. So, for example, for marriages that are less than 20 years but greater than 15 years, alimony could extend up to 80% of the number of months of the marriage. So you take the number of months of the marriage, you multiply it by 80%, and that gives you a sense of what your alimony duration could be. But like in all things in probate and family court law, there are exceptions. And it's the exceptions where, you know, really talented family law lawyers can make a big difference.
You know, family law has changed a lot in Massachusetts in the last 30 years. Have you ever seen a case of like a clawback where someone wants to go back as the laws have changed and asked for a reconciliation on past payments?
Oh, wait, absolutely. It's very common. As a matter of fact, increasingly so after the enactment of the Alimony Reform Act. There was a progeny of there was a few major cases in their progeny that came out after the Alimony Reform Act where payor spouses were going into court and saying, hey, listen, I understand this is an ex post facto application of the law, but here's the truth. Had I known that there could be a duration limit on my alimony obligation, I wouldn't have agreed to pay alimony until my death, or her remarriage. So the law actually made that okay. The Alimony Reform Act and some case laws that came in its wake actually made it okay for a payor spouse to go back to court and terminate alimony payments that otherwise would have been indefinite.
So did the law itself say it could be used retroactively, or did courts just reopen cases in light of the prospective change in the law and then apply it to pre-existing divorces?
It was primarily defined by case law, but in defining the case law, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court actually looked back at the intent behind the enactment of the act, read the minutes, read the proposals, read the different draft forms of the Reform Act in making a determination that indeed that is what was intended, that a payor spouse could avail him or herself of durational limits even years after he or she was divorced.
You know, it's really interesting for me. So many times earlier in my career, I'd be working with families and, you know, a divorced couple would have to take one of the spouses would have to take a hit, a very unfair hit, to get a deal. For many reasons, because family and money is involved. And, you know, in business, even in a partnership buyout, there's only so long that a partner can go back and claw back and re-challenge a buyout. Is there a reasonable amount of time with something like this?
One would think, but it hasn't been articulated as such yet. I mean, there isn't a case on point that says, okay, you have X number of months or years in order to do it. I think it's really case sensitive. And that's where, you know, family law lawyers can make all the difference, because all of these cases are very, very fact sensitive. And, you know, perhaps somebody could have been married for 12 years and have paid alimony for 30 and then be seeking a clawback. Well, in that case, probably makes sense for there to be some kind of retroactive adjustment of his or her term. But when the cases are closer, when the facts are closer, say a 15-year marriage and a 13-year payment, who knows what's going to happen? And that's where the Alimony Reform Act, and frankly, really talented divorce lawyers who are capable of interpreting that, can make a difference.
Well, again, as usual, speaking to attorneys, always very interesting subjects with Mark Furman here. If someone's looking for you and your firm, how would they do that?
You could Google me. As the saying goes, I certainly have a strong web presence, as does everyone in my firm, or they could just call me directly. I'm one of the lawyers who takes great pride in answering my own phone still. If I'm in the office, you can call me at 617-345-3654. I'd be happy to take your call.
Wow, you must be a fan of Mark Z, who always believes in giving people's phone numbers. But I usually find that people over the age of 50 give their phone number. People under the age of 50 don't. So I don't know where you straddle that. I would have guessed you were the younger.
Well, I look fantastic for my age, yeah.
Great. And Mark Furman, if someone's looking for you at Tarla Breed Hart and Rogers, how would they find you?
I, of course, can be reached by phone at 617-218-2025 or at mfurman, F-U-R-M-A-N, at tbhr-law.com.
And I can attest to that because for 35 years I have called that number and I've heard the answer, two words, Mark Furman. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. We're going to sign off. We'll be right back after this short break.